welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com and it is the first weekend of June 2013 as I record this, and it's episode 157 of the podcast. So today I'm really excited to have an interview with Stephanie Chandler, who is amazing because back in 2007 I actually read one of her books called From Entrepreneur to Infopreneur, and that helped me decide to start an online business. I actually put her ideas and concepts into action. And, you know, fast forward six years, and I'm basically doing what she espoused in her book. So I was so thrilled to have her on the show to talk about the business and marketing side of writing, and especially non-fiction specifically, which is what she specialises in. But as we talk about, there's lots that everyone can learn. So talking of author entrepreneurs, I've also been in the Lake District for the last week on a holiday with my extended family. But what was brilliant is we visited Hilltop Farm, which is where Beatrix Potter had a working farm and where she lived in the sort of from when she was sort of middle-aged onwards. And it was brilliant to go there because she is a fantastic example of an author entrepreneur and obviously children's book writer and illustrator. And with the income from her books and her merchandise, she actually bought a number of farms on the banks of Lake Windermere and gifted them to the British public after her death. And if you've seen the film Miss Potter with Renée Zellweger, you'll know a bit about that. But it was really awesome to kind of go to her little house and see her farm and realise that essentially, you know, writers who are savvy business people, and you know, she went and actually, you know, found a publisher and you know, was very involved in the process, and then also was very savvy about merchandising opportunities. They have some of her letters there, and then obviously, you know, bought land. So I'm going to read her biography and do a blog post on her at some point, because back then women were not really considered business brains, and she was also unmarried at that point. She did marry, she didn't have children, but anyway, she's a really interesting author, entrepreneur type of figure, and we often think of Beatrix Potter as sort of all kind of quaint and little pictures, you know, Jemima Puddle Duck and Peter Ravis and stuff like that. But I was really thrilled to kind of see that other side, and I was talking to a friend, and you know, kind of saying people always underestimate the fact that you can make money with books, and so often, you know, we think this is just a you know, a love thing, and it's a, you know, poor writers in the garret type of thing. But I totally disagree with that. I think if you do want to make a career, you absolutely can, and that's certainly what I'm intending to do, what I'm doing. Yeah, so I was really inspired by Beatrix Potter and her creativity that's also spilled into successful business. I also spent a few days at Crime Fest in Bristol over the last few days, which was fascinating. What struck me most, because of course the last convention I went to was Thriller Fest in New York, and I see such a difference between the American authors and the British authors, and the American fans and British fans. I think maybe there's a national character difference there, but it was even just the panels on, you know, violence in writing and that type of thing. The thriller books, I think thriller authors and thriller writers are a bit more gung-ho about that type of thing. And I really went because my next book, Desecration, has some crime elements and has a detective in it. But I'm definitely personally more in the thriller niche, blowing stuff up and that type of thing, at least for now. What was interesting was quite a lot of discussion on the boundaries of genre, because of course crime can spill into horror, it can spill into thriller, it can spill into literary, it can spill into sci-fi, romance, that type of thing. And actually what I didn't even know is that romantic suspense is a big genre in America. It just doesn't really exist in Britain. So that's fascinating too. But the overall sort of feeling was that readers of ebooks are finding books across genres. So, you know, with the people who bought this, bought that type of thing. So they are not necessarily only shopping in a specific genre. So that's cool. And also that readers follow authors across genre. So that was interesting as well. So I actually learned quite a lot. I did do a 20-minute session on self-publishing, which was crazy because obviously you can't cover much in 20 minutes. But I was quite pleased with that because in previous years, self-published authors wouldn't even have been acknowledged. So that was quite cool. A highlight was also meeting Zoe Sharp, who's a great British author whose Charlie Fox thrillers feature a kick-ass female protagonist like my Morgan Sierra from the Arcane books. And definitely try those out, Zoe Sharp, Charlie Fox thrillers. Her first one has an intro by Lee Child, so if you like Lee Child, you'll like Zoe Sharp. But Zoe got the rights back for some of her backlist and self-published them and is really supportive of self-publishing, and she's doing really well herself, so is one of these kind of hybrid authors. So it was great to meet her, and I certainly didn't get any negative reactions when I talked to some of the authors there about being self-published. So I definitely think that Britain is changing as well in terms of its attitude. So my publishing news, Desecration is finally out on submission with my agent in the US, so we'll see how that goes. I've also had a number of people email me and ask me yet again why I still want a traditional deal, and I thought I would relate that to a study that's just come out from Digital Book World for BEA, Book Expo America, which found that authors are moving into self-publishing for these reasons: creative control, money and ease of the publishing process, and into traditional publishing for distribution, publishing support, and prestige, kudos, and let's face it, ego. So I think that pretty much sums me up. The publishing support is not really the thing. The main thing for me is distribution, because I want wider distribution, a wider audience. There are certainly still people who only shop in bookstores and only shop, you know, with publishers, basically. I also am interested in TV and film, and realistically most of the books that get picked up for those are not self-published. You know, there are lots of things that are changing in the industry, but personally I would like to be a hybrid author. I think both options are fantastic for different projects. I'm still indie publishing, obviously, because my Arcane books are in print and ebook formats, and which I've self-published. My non-fiction is self-published. So I think I'm just pro any kind of publishing, except the rip-off Author Solutions type of publishing. And I've talked about that before. But yeah, so I hope that explains the reasons why I want a deal. But equally, I'm incredibly well educated about contracts these days, so it will probably have to be a hell of a deal for me to actually take anything. But hey, we've just got to see. But more exciting publishing news, I think, is that Pentecost is now available on Audible as an unabridged audiobook. So at audible.com. If you search for Pentecost JF Penn, you'll find it, but I'll also put a link in the show notes. It is read by Veronica Guerra, and I always pronounce her name wrong, but Veronica's fantastic, and there'll also be a little promo after this intro that you can listen to, which has Veronica's voice. And I'm also going to interview Veronica on the podcast in a couple of months' time, because we are that booked ahead, but essentially to talk about the process of reading an author's work. And I just love the voices she's done. It's been so good. But that is published under Griffinwood Press, basically a small press that I signed with for the audio rights so that we could go through ACX. ACX.com, which is an Audible Creation Exchange. So essentially it's more like a profit share arrangement between us. And I love the fact that as self-published authors, we have the chance to do this type of thing. So I'm pretty excited about that. So the audio is about 7.5 hours, and I just grinned the whole way through when I listened to it. So you can obviously buy it directly on Audible, but you can also get a free audio ebook, sorry, a free audio audiobook if you sign up for a trial, and you can get one if you go to audiblepodcast.com/thecreativepen. I will also link to that in the show notes, and here follows the audio promo and then the interview with Stephanie Chandler.
A power kept secret for 2,000 years, a woman who stands to lose everything. India. When a nun is burned alive on the sacred ghats of Varanasi and the stone she carried is stolen, an international hunt is triggered for the relics of the early church. Forged in the fire and blood of martyrs, the Pentecost stones have been handed down through generations of keepers who kept their power and location secret. Until now. The keepers are being murdered, the stones stolen by those who would use them for evil in a world transformed by religious fundamentalism. Oxford University psychologist Morgan Sierra is forced into the search when her sister and niece are held hostage. She is helped by Jake Timber from the Mysterious Arcane, a British government agency specializing in paranormal and religious experience. Morgan must risk her own life to save her family, but will she ultimately be betrayed? From ancient Christian sites in Spain, Italy, and Israel to the far reaches of Iran and Tunisia, Morgan and Jake must track down the stones through the myths of the early church in a race against time before a new Pentecost is summoned, this time powered by the fires of evil. Pentecost, an arcane thriller, available now on audible.com as well as in print and ebook editions on Amazon and all online bookstores. Find out more at jfpen.com.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Stephanie Chandler. Hi Stephanie.
Good morning, Joanna, or evening to you.
Indeed, another cross-Atlantic call. Now, just as a little intro, Stephanie is an author, professional speaker and publisher, named as one of the top 100 small business influencers in 2012. As well as being the author of 5 non-fiction books, Stephanie also helps people write, publish and market their books at Authority Publishing. So thanks for coming on the show, Stephanie. It's great to talk to you.
Oh, that's a thrill for me, Joanne. I've been following you on Twitter for quite a while now.
So let's start by talking a bit more about you. So you escaped corporate America in 2003 to go into writing and publishing. So I wondered if you could, you know, maybe outline, you know, how your career's gone and what are the major changes you've seen in your business over that time?
Oh my goodness, it's been quite a journey. I quit my software sales job in 2003 and I actually opened a bookstore in Sacramento, California, a 2,800 square foot bookstore. And my big master plan was I was going to sit in the back office and write novels. And all very naive. And several things happened in that process. It turned out about 6 weeks after I opened the store, I looked around and thought, oh my gosh, what have I done? I don't want to own a retail business. I found out I was a lousy novelist. I did not have the imagination that you need for that. And I'd open it in a strip mall that didn't have a lot of street visibility. So I really had to learn a lot about marketing, and I was spending money on coupon mailers and phone book ads, and they just weren't working. So I turned to the internet, learned how to optimize our website, sell online, and it was, you know, a game changer for the business. And I also started writing nonfiction. I wrote my first book. It was a business startup guide. And suddenly I was getting invited to speak and consult, and I found myself falling into this new career I hadn't even planned. And I launched a site called businessinfoguide.com. And basically, I was blogging before I knew what blogging was. And the whole thing, it was just like one step in front of the other. This journey kind of unfolded before me. And I ended up selling that store in 2007 to become a full-time marketing consultant. And then a year later, I launched Authority Publishing, which is my publishing company. So I kind of get the best of all worlds. I get to speak and consult and help other people produce their books. And I also had several books traditionally published along the way, and I got really turned off by traditional publishing. So I'm quite happy to have full control over all of my content and be able to help other people do the same thing.
Oh, wow, that's so cool. I'm really glad you told me about those things, because that physical, the physical bookstore thing, because I went into a physical business. I had a dive charter business, scuba diving.
Oh, wow.
So I totally understand the issue with a physical business. And it was even worse than yours, because, you know, you have to have the right weather and the right people and, you know, a boat.
Oh, jeez. That is wild. And what a divergence you've made with your career.
Yeah, exactly. But then I want to ask you about that, because I was an IT consultant, you know, similar background to yourself, I guess. And you mentioned there that you kind of fell into this internet marketing, you fell into blogging. So, and a lot of people see me and they see you and they go, oh, you know, you must have a degree in marketing. You must have, you know, how do you know this stuff? So what's your answer? You know, how did you learn all this stuff over time?
Yeah, no, I set out to be an English teacher of all things. And so I absolutely did not have a background in marketing. And I think like a lot of people, I just started learning and I found out I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. I love to test new things. There's so many resources, far more today than there were when I was starting. I used to study how other people were doing things. That was a huge thing for me, was to study how other people were putting up their sites and how they were selling their products. And I found that really, really helpful. And so today we've got, you know, far more books and websites and people like you and me who give people advice on how to do this stuff. But, you know, part of it, I think, is really just wanting to be successful, because I see a lot of people who don't want to do the work. And I think that's a big challenge. If you don't want to do the work, it's not going to happen. I mean, none of this came easily, right?
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that too, because I mentioned 2003 because, you know, you deserve all the success you have, because that's been like 10 years.
It's 10 years, 10 crazy years. Yeah,
exactly. And I feel like, you know, I'm coming up to 5 years of my blog. And like you say, we put the work in, you know, so yeah. it does take a lot of work. But I guess one of the big things there, of course, is there are benefits to have started earlier. And now self-publishing is, of course, mainstream. It's kind of trendy even. And more and more people are writing books. So is it still possible to stand out in this crowded market as an author?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I'll tell you why. Because most people don't know what they're doing. So, you know, I mean, the truth is, the basics, the foundation of all of this to me today are a blog and social media. If you can put together a good blog, really know your target audience, carve out a niche, and then get on social media and be interesting and share resources, you know, cultivate content, help your audience, you can absolutely stand out.
Mm, and that's certainly what I do. Is that what you recommend purely for nonfiction, or do you also have fiction clients?
Yeah, I primarily work with nonfiction, but I certainly speak at a lot of conferences. And for fiction authors, I think it's a little bit harder. I think for nonfiction, we have it a little bit easier because usually our audience is very clear. You know, our audience is looking for information. In the fiction world, you have to get creative. You know, you have to find a theme from your book that you can work with, you know, whether it's based on the location where the book is set, or, you know, something from the book, an illness or a hobby or a business. And so you have to really work with those themes to create interesting content that can draw people in.
Mm, no, absolutely. And I definitely think there's a difference. And I certainly, you know, blog a lot more on my creative pen site than I do on my fiction site at JF Pen. So it is... It is a difficult thing. But I wondered there, you also said that so many people don't know what they're doing. So what are sort of the top two mistakes you see from, you know, people who jump into this without really knowing what they're up to?
I think they get frustrated way too quickly. I'm sure you see this too. I talk to clients all the time. Well, I have a blog, but nobody was reading it, so I don't really bother with it. Well, what they don't realize is a blog is truly a long-term commitment. Very few people have overnight success with a blog. You have to commit. You have to be consistent 2 or 3 times a week at a minimum to get started, because that's how you build up credibility with Google. People start to find you. The more content you write, the more reasons you give Google to find you. So you have to expect that you're in it for the long haul and not and be patient. You know, I tell my authors too, that's why I love working with nonfiction, your book doesn't have an expiration date. You know, fiction authors get a lot of pressure. You got to really market as soon as the book comes out. With nonfiction, your book, you can be marketing it and selling it for years and years. So plan for the marathon of it. Make it a priority. You know, watch less TV and blog more. Right. You know, it's really that simple. You know, and another thing I always tell people, even New York Times bestselling authors have day jobs. Few of us have the luxury of promoting our books full time. We all work. And so, you know, you're not alone. If you've got a full-time job and you're trying to do this, you just have to figure out how to make it a priority. Do you get up earlier in the morning? Do you stay up later at night? You know, I'm always playing with my schedule and coming back to work late at night sometimes. So you just have to stick with it.
Yeah, and it's, you mentioned the TV. It was when I gave up the TV 5 years ago that my life really changed.
That does not surprise me at all, because you get so much more done.
You do. You really do. And it just, yeah, it gives you that more headspace. But I want to pick up on something you said there. You mentioned about that nonfiction doesn't age and you can, but you know, promote it over time, and fiction is more pressure. I feel the total opposite. Yeah, I do. I feel the total opposite, because fiction, a story, you know, I've been reading, you know, obviously we all read novels that are 100-year-old, you know, or, you know, much older than that, as well as books. Like, I've just been reading James Herbert from the 80s, the horror series.
Oh, yes.
You remember him? He just died recently. And anyway, so, and I did a video on it on YouTube and actually went, oh my goodness, I'm just stunned. You know, a story doesn't age, and people buy it your whole life and they can buy your whole backlist. And so it's so funny you said that's totally different.
Well, and I guess where I'm coming from on that is from a traditional media perspective, which, as you know, you're probably right in that. It doesn't matter like it used to. You know, even 5 years ago in publishing, it was all about how are you going to get media coverage? Mm. Well, these days we care a lot less about traditional media coverage because we have internet media and bloggers and podcasts and other places to promote our work. So you're probably right about that. It's just that traditional media doesn't really want to talk to fiction authors after their books have been out for years.
Yeah,
you know?
No, you're right. And actually, follow up on that then. You know, I have people emailing me saying, I want to spend thousands of dollars to get some traditional media so that I can sell millions of books. But do you think that traditional media actually sells books for self-published authors who aren't in bookstores?
A great question. I think your mileage varies a lot with traditional media. And I am not a huge fan of going with the full publicist unless you really have something that's very newsworthy and you know you're going to get a lot of play. But I'll tell you, in my own experience, I was featured in an article in Wired Magazine, the UK edition. And I was so excited. It was a big sidebar off the cover story. I was like, wow, this is going to sell tons of books. I really saw a very small spike in book sales because of that. Mm. And so you never know. And there are authors who've been on Oprah who will tell you, I had an appearance on Oprah, but I didn't sell books. You know, she didn't hold it up and promote it, but they mentioned my book. So, you know, yeah, media is a gamble. And I think these days we are much more interested in what bloggers have to say. Mm. You know, if a blogger recommends a book, and it's a blogger I respect, I'm going to go buy that book. So I think that's a much better place to focus your efforts. Mm.
No, me too. And I think it's almost down to the fact that online, people see it and they can click a buy link right now, whereas on TV or newspapers, there's no buy now link and people have forgotten you 10 minutes later.
They have. And you know, I love that you say that, because I'm a huge fan of internet radio. And whenever I release a new book, I put myself on an internet radio tour, pitch myself to all the internet radio shows. And I've done tons of traditional radio over the years, and they have you on for 5, maybe 10 minutes. People are sitting in their cars. They're not really paying attention. They're not ready to buy. But internet radio shows, even though the audience may be significantly smaller, it's often a niche audience. People are often sitting at their computers. I can almost always see my Amazon rank improve, you know, within hours after doing one of those interviews. So it has really changed. The whole landscape of publicity has changed.
Mm, I'm so glad you say that. And I hope people listening realize that, you know, it's much better to find the top 5 blogs in your niche than it is to send out, a PR spam thing to 10,000 journalists, which is what people seem to do.
That's so true.
It's just crazy. But no, I wanted to ask you there. So you talk about niche or niche, as you say in the US, but that is one of the biggest problems I see people have. So for example, someone might say, I've written a book on communication. And I'm like, well, I don't think that's actually a niche. So what are some of your tips on, you know, really discovering what your niche is and also how that relates to what book you actually write?
Oh, good. I so love this question. I'm really passionate about narrowing down the focus of your audience. And you just gave a great example. You know, if you're writing a sales guide, perhaps it should be for the technology industry, or it should be for women business owners. You know, it should be much more specific. And I think this scares people. They think, well, then I'm going to miss my audience. But the fact is that it's harder for your audience to connect with you if you have a more general reach. Whereas if you've got a book for sales for women business owners, I perk up and say, oh, that's me. But if you have a general sales guide, I say, oh, well, that I don't really know why I would want to read that. So, you know, I've learned this myself the hard way over the years. You know, one of my books several years ago, which was The Author's Guide to Building an Online Platform, it's kind of diluted because I had to cover fiction, nonfiction, mention children's books. You know, that, and it was traditionally published, so, you know, I just kind of had to follow directions on that. And fast forward 5 years later, I've got a new book coming out called The Nonfiction Book Marketing Plan. Mm-hmm. It has just made much more sense for me over the years to figure out that I could stop talking to all authors everywhere, and I could really narrow my focus and make a difference and have a better connection with people. So if you can narrow your focus, I think you're going to be far more successful.
Mm, I totally agree with you. And how does that relate to book title? Well, you've given one example there, book title, and sort of SEO, search engine optimization, keywords, all of that. How does that relate?
Oh, so important. You know, and I've done this from the beginning. All of my books have ridiculously long subtitles, and some people kind of tease me about that, but I don't care because I want to show up in Google search and Amazon searches. Mm-hmm. So I am a big fan of a wordy, long subtitle that captures your target audience and gets the keywords in that people are searching for. And that's a delicate balance. You know, I'm sure you do the same thing. My titles change 58 times before I land on the final title for a book.
Mm. So that, I mean, and the important point there is for nonfiction, this is not an emotional decision. This is a keyword decision.
It's so true. And I had somebody recently who's a title maker for books. He said, oh, you need a flashier title. I said, I don't want a flashier title. I want my wordy, keyword-rich title that speaks to my audience. So,
yeah.
It's delicate balance for sure.
Oh, that's so, because I recently, just last year, I changed one of my first book was called How to Enjoy Your Job, terrible title, but it was kind of emotional at the time. And last year I changed it to Career Change, colon, How to Find What You Love, really long title that I can't even remember. And now it sells about 10 times as many books.
Absolutely. Titles make a huge difference. And I'm the same way, by the way. Sometimes I have to look up my subtitles because I can't even remember them.
But, that's great. Whatever, you know, it works on Amazon, so that's cool. No, that's brilliant. The other thing I wanted to, just going back on the long-term thing that I think is fascinating, is that, you know, like you've just said about your career, and my career, you know, we're writers that are, and online, we don't know what's going to happen, but this is a long-term business. So I think, you know, when we talk about blogging and all of this stuff, aren't we all of it aiming for a long-term career? This is not just a sales spike on launch, is it? It's a long-term thing.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, more and more with my clients in particular, I try to tell them it's not just about selling the book. You know, quite frankly, I could care less how many copies of my books I sell because they bring me so many other opportunities, speaking engagements and consulting inquiries and clients and corporate sponsors. I've made hundreds of thousands of dollars in corporate sponsors from just one of my books. So I'm absolutely all about the long-term strategy. How does this fit in with what you do or what you want to do with your career? You know, I've written at least one of my books specifically as a goal of driving clients into my publishing business. So I think that's very important that you don't just get hung up on how many copies are selling, but how many opportunities are coming your way.
Mm. And I think that's probably only relevant if people have more than the book.
True, or want to have more than the book. I mean, and that's fine. If your book is your passion project, that's great. Just know that, you know, it's hard to make a living off of a single book. Mm. And my advice there is keep writing. You know, you don't just be a one-hit wonder. You know, musicians don't just release one song and then write it for 20 years. They release more and more music. And today with ebooks and things like that, I mean, it's easier than ever to get your work out there. So just keep going.
Mm. And in fact, your book, From Entrepreneur to Infopreneur, which was what, about 6 years ago, I think? Now?
Something like that. It might be 7 years. Yeah, yes. It's been a while.
6 or 7. That was one of the books that influenced me back when I was working full time and desperate to get out of my job and helped me start a website and also look into selling digital products. So I wanted to say a big thank you for that.
Oh, I so love hearing that. Thank you. You set such a great example for everyone listening on how to do that right. So
oh,
thank
you're sweet. But no, it's cool. As I said to you before, you know, it's cool to be talking to you after so many years of like putting this into action. But why, you know, and that book gave me a lot of ideas around how I could have a business around a book. But what are some ideas for people to think about if they have a nonfiction book? What are some of the possible businesses just, you know, at a high level?
Well, you know, that the Infopreneur book is all about digital products, and the landscape of the marketplace has changed even since I wrote that book. There's so much free content available online. And so it gets back to having a really narrow target audience and then carving out unique products for your audience. I have a great friend, Carl Polachek. I love to use him as an example with this topic because he owned an IT business. He was a technology consultant that had clients. They supported their computers. Well, he decided he was going to go out and become a business consultant. But he didn't want to be a general business consultant. He became a business consultant for other IT consultants, teaching them how to grow their businesses. Well, here's what's happened. He is like a rock star in the IT community. He has, I don't know, well over a dozen books and over 100 digital products. Now, he makes thousands of dollars every month just from his digital products, audio recordings, workbooks, videos. He records everything he's ever done, and he sells the recordings of everything. He's got things translated into Spanish now. I mean, he is a product master, and he's a great example of how you can really build a career or an income, a lifestyle around digital products that most of his business is completely automated.
Mm, and I, you know, I love that. And that was kind of my model as well. But he's obviously gone for a model with more money.
a niche
with more money. I mean, IT consultants have money, but it's quite interesting because teaching is obviously one of the big things. It's like, if you have expertise, you can teach that to others. So online stuff is one thing, but you know, what about the speaking model? Is that something that you like?
You know, I do. I did not set out to be a speaker. I just want to be clear about that. I'm a member of the National Speakers Association and all of this. If I had my choice, I'd rather write than speak. However, I think it's extremely important that authors learn how to be good speakers. Not only is it a great way to build your audience and get out there, but, you know, it can be lucrative. You can certainly get paid very well to speak and get to travel if that's something you want to do. So I'm very happy I have that skill in my tool belt, so to speak. And I definitely encourage authors, if you're not comfortable with it yet, go join a Toastmasters group, get comfortable with it, because you're going to need it, right? I'm sure you do a lot of speaking as well, Joanna.
Oh, I do. And I was in the National Speakers Association as well. That's
oh, good.
That's so funny. We've got this parallel path. I'm a few years behind you, but...
Must be doing something right. So, yeah.
It's true, but I really think learning how to speak is so important for authors. If you think about it as a, you know, even as a fiction author, if you become popular, you have to speak at festivals. You have to read from your work, especially if you're a fiction author. You know, non-fiction authors don't tend to do that. They tend to speak more. But, you know, giving a good sort of impression of yourself is important. And you can sell at the back of the room, can't you, as well?
Oh, you can absolutely sell at the back of the room, and you can really study the craft. I mean, I guess we were talking earlier about how do you learn to do these things. Mm-hmm. You know, I love to watch how other people do it. And you can get online and go watch TED.com videos and see how speakers really create compelling stories. It's all about storytelling. Mm-hmm. And watch videos on YouTube and just learn how to really be engaging with an audience. If you can speak, your possibilities really are unlimited.
Mm, and you stand out as well because so many authors are terrible speakers.
Yes, that's the truth. It is the truth.
It is. No, that's fantastic. Right, so I wanted to ask you about your most recent book, I think, which is Own Your Own Niche. Is that right?
That was the last one. I have a new one coming out next month. But yeah, that's my most recent, Own Your Niche. It's about, you know, marketing online and doing it without...
And I think one of the things I saw was it mentions hype-free in internet marketing. And I wondered if I know everyone would be like, yes, I want hype free. You know, I hate hype. I hate the big sale. You know, what do you mean by that? And what's a good example?
Yeah, I really wanted to come out and just say, look, you can be successful with sales online without irritating people. You don't have to send email every day. In fact, please don't do that. We're all so tired of those sales processes. You know, the term squeeze page just irritates me. It's just a way of churning. I call it the churn and burn, the way a lot of internet marketers really approach things. And I like to say, you know, imagine if you were on Amazon and every sales page for a book went on and on and on and on and on. It was this long, horrible sales letter with fake testimonials for the author's friends. And it was horrible. You wouldn't want to buy anything. And, you know, people will tell you that these long pages work and they do. But I'm here to tell you that you can also generate plenty of sales with great sales copy, some real testimonials, and a buy button. Right? I mean, it doesn't have to be cheesy. It doesn't have to be over the top. And you don't have to piss off your email subscribers. That's basically the bottom line.
But the bottom line there is you need an email subscriber list. You'd still say that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I absolutely do. You know, people are trying to say email marketing is dead. It is not dead. It's harder than ever because we don't want to give up our email addresses. And we're really discerning. You know, if I sign up for a mailing list and I'm suddenly getting a ton of email, or the emails I'm getting have no value, I'm going to drop off the list. Mm-hmm. So it's our responsibility as marketers, as authors, to give really great content and make our audience want to stay on that list and stay connected to us.
Mm. So really hype-free is hopefully, I mean, I think I do this, is, you know, give great content, be useful, you know, or be entertaining. Being useful or entertaining, that seems to me to be the bottom line.
That's huge. You're absolutely, and those are the two key factors, and you do that very well. And it's the same thing, whether it's your email, your website, your blog, you're giving lots of great content that makes people feel loyal to you. And then therefore they're going to come back and buy your products and buy your next book that comes out or buy the info product that you've put together. So it's so important to come from the perspective of your audience. What do they want? What do they need? How can you help them or entertain them, as you said?
Mm, and it seems to me it's this, you know, it's simple, but it's not easy. That's the point.
That's true. It's not easy. And, you know, we all, with that thing with having day jobs, and I got behind on blogging the last few weeks, which I never do. And I get so frustrated when I don't even have my time to blog. You know, it's a creative outlet for me. I love it. So, you know, it is hard. It's frustrating. It's time consuming, but it really is worth it. As you know, you know, you put in the time, it starts to pay off. You get these small wins that turn into bigger wins. And you know, I just wouldn't trade what I do for anything at this point. It's too much fun.
Oh, I'm so glad you say that because I find this fun too. And I don't think, I didn't anyway. I didn't think it would be fun at the beginning. Did you think you would enjoy it?
No, I did not. I never thought I was going to be a marketer. I never planned any of that. So I'm just grateful for it. I love that it's a creative outlet. Mm. I feel like my path has found me. And I think that's another bit of advice for people. I mean, I thought I was going to be sitting in a bookstore with my two store cats writing novels, right? And my life is so different than what I thought it was going to be. And I'm grateful for that. I found my passion. Mm. So don't be afraid to take a turn or try something different. Or, you know, if you start the business and you hate it, sell it, get rid of it, start over. That's, you know, that's the beauty of being human and having these opportunities that we have.
Fantastic. So tell us about your next book, your latest book.
Oh, it's called The Nonfiction Book Marketing Plan, and it's just covering online and offline marketing strategies. I should have written it years ago. I've been teaching it forever. And again, it's that niche audience, niche focus. And it also supports my latest endeavor, which is I launched a nonfiction authors association just a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, I'm really being very clear about my target audience right now and just having a ton of fun with all of it. So the book will be out in early June.
Fantastic. So just tell us a bit more about that organization and where people can find out more about that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's nonfictionauthorsassociation.com. We're in beta right now. For those of you who don't know what that means, that's kind of a test phase. I have definitely had some site challenges since we've gone up. But basically, the goal of the association is to provide an online community for authors to support each other. We have monthly teleseminars coming. You get marketing homework emailed to you every week if you want it. If you want some, you know, here's a way to market your book this week. I just really want to, I'm passionate about supporting nonfiction authors and bringing them all together so we can support each other.
Oh, no, that's fantastic. And I think this is one of the biggest things that happens over time as an author and also as a blogger, is you find your community. And when I first started, like when I read your book back in like whenever it was like, I don't know any authors. I don't know any internet marketers. I don't know anybody. You know, I don't even imagine how I can get to that point. But it happens over time, doesn't it?
It happens, very organically in a lot of cases. Some of my greatest friends and supporters are people I've never met in person. We've got online relationships. It starts from maybe asking somebody to write a post on your blog or interview them for your podcast, you know, or speak at your event, or, you know, make it worth their while too. And you make friends very quickly that way. Mm. And you and I said before this call, you know, our industry is rather small. I think it's really important that we all support each other. I mean, there's plenty of business to go around. So we should all be working together to, you know, really support each other and our audiences.
I call that co-opetition. Have you heard that?
I love that term. Yeah. Yes. And you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And if people don't know, it's, you know, cooperating with your competition. And we're not really competition, as you say. That's the point. We all promote each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I say, you know, so many people ask me, they probably do with you too, you know, about all the negative stuff online and all the haters and all the trolls. And I'm like, do you know, my world just isn't like that. My world is happy, smiley, positive people.
It's so true. And you bring up a big fear a lot of people have. If I get online, I'm going to get all this negative feedback. It's so rare, so few and far between. Yes, you'll get a negative review on Amazon. You know, get over it. Some people just have nothing better to do with their time. But, you know, it feels vulnerable to put yourself out there for the first time. Mm. But my experience has absolutely been that people want to help each other, and it's a more fun and more good happy days than anything else.
Oh, good. It's been so good talking to you, Stephanie. I really feel like we've, you know, we've got a similar path. It's just quite funny.
We do. I hope our paths cross in person one of these days. It would be great to meet you in person.
Well, I definitely want to come and speak in America. It's like, it's on my goal list. I'm getting closer, you know, moving from Australia back to London.
Oh, wow.
I'm getting closer.
Getting closer.
I am. So where can people find you and your books and your services online?
Authoritypublishing.com we do custom publishing and social media marketing for authors. My author site is stephaniechandler.com. You can actually pre-order the nonfiction book marketing plan and download the PDF right away before anybody else sees it. And then, of course, the nonfictionauthorsassociation.com. I'm so excited about that. I think we're going to do really exciting things in the coming years. So, Joanna, thank you. This has been so much fun.
Oh, no, thank you, Stephanie.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.